we can do multiple trips if we need to. Or if we get a campground nearby, we can work from there, Monica said. No need to move at all. And we could rig up a shaker table, Bill added. We could process a lot more creek bed with a good mechanical setup. Richard nodded, plainly pleased at the response he was getting. Regarding cashing in the gold, I was going to use a gold buying service originally, but they offer a really terrible price per ounce. However, there are legitimate prospectors still operating even these days. Assay service companies will buy the raw gold for a flat fee plus a small percentage.
Will they handle this much?
No. And if we walk in with too large of a deposit, it probably triggers some kind of IRS reporting requirements and all kinds of other complications. Not to mention them just getting curious. So I've made a list of all the companies in a couple hundred mile radius that offer this service. We'll split things up and take turns with the submissions.
But that's not paranoid or anything. Richard turned to glare at Bill.
Oh, are you an expert? Should I be asking for your advice?
Bill laughed, unfazed by Richard's show of anger. Nah, fair enough. Better too much caution than not enough, anyway. But we'll also need a cover story.
Yeah, something about your deceased father or uncle who's been doing recreational panning for decades and never bothered to cash any of it in.
Monica laughed. Aaron's not going to be happy about lying.
25. Suspicions rise. July 3rd. Lem Carpentier watched the hot chick walk out the office door. On any other day, his mind would have been entirely on the view, but the package she had dropped off. Lem looked down at the bag of raw gold nuggets and marveled. It was all nuggets, no flakes, no grains. Someone hadn't even bothered to collect the small stuff, or maybe hadn't bothered to include it in the load. Either way, someone had access to a whole lot of gold. Placer gold, too, which meant there would be a vein somewhere upstream of wherever this had been panned. Lem looked up at the ceiling, considering. Of course, the girl's story of an eccentric uncle wasn't totally out of the question. There were enough sites in the western and northwestern U.S. that might still have had some unclaimed gold up to 50 years ago, but the old guy would have had to be all over the place. Platte River, Sweetwater, Tin Cup, Rattlesnake Hills, the Sierra Nevada. No. It was far more likely to be total bullshit, which meant the real source of the gold was something they didn't want to discuss. But what other explanation was there? That some kid had found a completely untapped strike, and a girl at that? Especially one who looked like she'd never stepped on unpaved ground in her life? Not a chance. Which brought him right back around to square one. Lem picked up a handful of nuggets from the deposit and ran it slowly into the other hand. Good quality. This wasn't second or third wave product. And a quick eyeball estimate told him that this would bring in a total just under the reporting and withholding requirements. That wasn't coincidence either. Something smelled. The more he thought about it, the smellier it got. Normally, he would skim a bit from a deposit even half this size, but maybe not this time. If this chick had something going, this wouldn't be the only deposit. He couldn't take a chance she'd think he ripped her off. If there was more to this, there would be more gold, and if that turned out to be the case, Lem knew some people who would be interested. Very interested.
26. Second Expedition. July 4th. Bill stuck his head out of the window of the motorhome.
This is perfect. Do they have it in hot pink?
Just ignore him, Richard said to the rental guy.
Do you have two of these available?
Two?
The man's eyebrows went up.
For how long?
A week.
No problem. We'll need two damage deposits, of course.
The salesman smiled and motioned to the office. Paperwork was signed, money was exchanged, and soon Bill and Richard were on their way to the warehouse.
The rest of the crew was waiting at the loading bay door, equipment crated and stacked. In less than half an hour, they were ready to go. The land yachts got terrible gas mileage, but driving them was a dream. The huge captain's chair and large steering wheel were comfortable, and the vehicles tracked dead straight on the highway. The cruise control was accurate and didn't need to be fussed over every time the slope changed. Every few hours, they would pull the convoy over to a rest stop, stretch their legs, and switch around occupants and drivers. On this leg, Bill, Monica, and Richard had ended up in the same vehicle, with Bill driving. Richard talked while poking away at his phone. "This time we'll be doing a couple of days of prospecting, and we'll spend some concentrated time at it. I'm laughing at myself for saying this, but $100,000 a day doesn't cut it."
"Can't disagree," Bill replied. "If you consider expenses, we might as well just get day jobs. This time around, I'd like to come out with at least enough to pay off next year's tuition." He looked at Richard. "Hey, boss man, are we going to have some place to stay this time, or are we winging it again? Because that was so much fun last time."
Richard gave Bill a look that was just short of a glare. "I phoned around before we left. I found a campground with hookups, and I was able to reserve a couple of spaces. Yes, even in high season."
"And we have plugs for hair dryers," Monica said.
A short drive later, Richard pointed to the right. "That's the campground." Bill braked carefully and maneuvered the motorhome into the parking lot. He stopped in front of the office and Monica hopped out. She was back in seconds with a map of the campsite. 10 minutes later, the motorhomes were parked in adjacent spots. One by one, people staggered out, stretching and groaning. "I don't understand how I can be more sore after traveling in something with a bed and a kitchen," Bill complained.
"Fewer stops, longer drive," Richard replied.
"It was a rhetorical statement."
"Uh-huh."
Matt looked from Bill to Richard, then rolled his eyes in Aaron's direction. She answered with a small smile. Richard continued after an awkward silence. "Let's set up the campfire first. The snowflake isn't the only one who's stiff, and we could use some relaxation." Bill glared but didn't argue. He and Matt retrieved firewood while the rest pulled out camp chairs and supplies. Richard handed out telescoping roasting sticks, and Monica passed around the bag of marshmallows. The last item out was a cooler of beer.
"Sure are roughing it,"
Monica commented, grabbing a beer. Aaron brought out a package of hot dogs.
"The name brand kind," she said.
"Oh, yeah," Bill said, beer in one hand, extended stick in the other. At the other end of the stick, a hot dog was being offered up to the fire god.
"Mm-hmm,"
Monica answered while giving all due attention to achieving the perfect toasted marshmallow. The fire crackled, sending up occasional small sparks. The smell of burning pine mixed with the aroma of sizzling wieners, a scent that said camping in a way that could not be argued. As the sun set and the air cooled, they hitched their chairs closer to the fire. The only sounds were the rustling of the trees and the occasional pop from the burning logs. This state lasted for about 15 minutes while the tension drained. Finally, Richard lowered his phone and looked at Aaron.
"Okay, Aaron. Time to spill. What happened with Yellowstone?"
Aaron looked around the campfire at the others. All eyes were on her. She pulled out her phone and passed it around with the video queued up for replay.
"Here's what I think. I'd love to get my prof involved, but I understand why that can't happen. We have the following facts. 1, there appear to be few or even no humans in Outland. Or at least not in North America. Neither Europeans nor Native Americans. I say this because we still have Pleistocene animals there, and on our side humans were partly or wholly responsible for the eradication of most of that wildlife. Right?"
Aaron glanced at Monica, who grinned and gave a thumbs up.
2. Around 75,000 years ago on our Earth, Toba blew its stack and almost but not quite obliterated the human race, according to archaeological evidence that we've dug up so far. 3. In Outland, Yellowstone blew up sometime in the last 100,000 years, probably in addition to Toba. I base that on the large amounts of volcanic ash layered onto the ground there. Put that all together, I think Yellowstone is the reason there are no humans there. And no humans is the reason we still see Pleistocene animals there.
Why Yellowstone? Bill said. I mean, why did you leap immediately to the conclusion that it was Yellowstone?
Ah, Aaron nodded. Yellowstone has blown before and left deep ash deposits around the U.S. We know of three large ones, Mesa Falls, Lava Creek, and Huckleberry Ridge ash beds. What I found in Outland was very similar to them, just a lot more recent. Yellowstone is the logical culprit.
Monica raised her beer in salute.
Logical, reasonable, and explains observed facts. It also explains the other thing that's been bugging me a bit.
She glanced around.
We have Pleistocene animals in Outland, but they're what you'd expect for Pleistocene animals. Recognizable species, I mean. There's nothing like an evolved dinosaur or a flying wolf or something even weirder. So Outland diverged from Earth long ago enough to preserve these species, but not so long ago that we see a significantly different evolutionary history. So Yellowstone is probably the event.
Aaron glanced over at Kevin.
I have no way to confirm that, he replied. All the math tells me is that in order for Outland to exist as a separate timeline, something significant has to have happened at some point to split it off.
Bill waved his hands in a hold it motion.
This is all very interesting, Aaron. That's not sarcasm, by the way. But does it have any real consequences for us? I mean, we assumed something did it, so why is Yellowstone in particular bothering you?
I know Kevin said that there's no reason for the two Earths to operate in lockstep. In fact, this proves that, but still, they're going to be similar, especially at the large scale. Both sides have gold deposits in the same places. Both sides apparently took a hit from the Yucatan asteroid, otherwise we'd be looking at raptors instead of smilodons. I get Monica's point about that. Both sides have Yellowstone, and I'll bet both sides have Hawaii and Toba. But something on the Outland side tipped the scales to cause Yellowstone to erupt, and that implies that it has the potential on this side. And maybe this is just me being ignorant of Kevin's theory, but wouldn't that imply that the difference between an eruption and no eruption is something very small? Very delicate?
Now it was Richard holding out his hands in a stop motion. Whoa, Aaron, you're starting to freak me out. Are you saying we're looking at an imminent eruption here now? Aaron looked down in silence for a few seconds.
A week ago, I'd have said no. Rationally, it should still be no. I mean, nothing has changed, right? And let's face it, whatever caused it to erupt in Outland happened up to 100,000 years ago. Whatever that event was, it's over. And the USGS statements are technically right about the Yellowstone activity on this side. We've seen these kinds of events before, and nothing big has happened. It's just that having it in my face like that kind of brings it home. To be honest, I don't feel quite so much like laughing at Bill's paranoia right now.
How much would it affect us, this far away? I mean, in Lincoln, not here, Bill asked.
Small eruption? No real biggie. Something along the lines of Mount St. Helens would be a minor inconvenience, that far away, even with Lincoln being downwind.
Aaron looked around at the others.
But if it was big enough, the effects could be severe. I mean, forced evacuation, severe.
Bill paused to think.
We could do things to be ready for that possibility. Maybe we could allocate some funds to set up a camp on the Outland side at the warehouse. We could get one of those big storage and equipment sheds farmers buy that are supposed to be critter-proof and can be put up by one or two people.
Richard grimaced. Oh, for fuck.
Great idea,
Monica said, interrupting Richard's complaint.
Maybe Yellowstone blows up. Maybe nuclear war breaks out. Maybe the gate technology causes an economic collapse. Maybe everything stays normal and we just want to have a summer home on the other side.
Bill squinted at her.
Didn't you say your parents were preppers? Don't give me that shit, Russ, Dad. You're into this as much as I am.
Guilty as charged.
But it's nice to not be the lone oddball for a change. Everyone okay with us spending a little money on this as a side project? I'm not entirely sure how much of a side project it is, even without the volcano narrative, Aaron replied. Once the gate tech gets out, everyone will have the same idea about gold mining and whatever else. Gold prices will tank. Probably most resource prices. We have to...
Get ours while we can, Richard said quietly.
It sounds really crappy when you say it like that, but essentially, yes. Six college kids aren't going to be able to compete with organized conglomerates. Once this is out, we're back to being, well...
College kids, Matt said. Richard glanced at Matt. You ain't wrong. The whole point of this, for Kevin and me, was to put together enough of a nest egg so that we can't have our research taken from us. Even then, there will be lawsuits relating to who actually owns it. There are too many books and movies about inventors who lose control of their invention. He looked at Bill. Right? Bill laughed. Would you like a list?
It'll be devastating for Outland when we go public, Monica said. Commercial fishing is all but obsolete here. Over on the Outland side, there's a whole planet full of unfished, undepleted stock.
Forests, Matt added. Every clear cut on this side ready to be clear cut again on Outland.
Buffalo. Millions of tons of meat on the hoof. Aurochs in Europe.
Aaron shook her head.
Groups who've been disenfranchised on this side will want their traditional land back on the other side. They'll try to recolonize. And I'm not just talking about Native Americans. Europe, the Middle East, Far East, Africa, Australia. Go back far enough, everyone's been kicked out of somewhere.
And maybe they won't agree about the disposition of Outland. More war.
Or it's a good place to send illegal immigrants, give them an axe and a gun, send them over, and tell them you're doing them a favor.
Or criminals. Australia, all over again. Oil drilling.
Mining.
Farming.
There will be arguments that we no longer have to worry about Earth's ecology when we have a backup.
Or alternatively, move industry to Outland, stop polluting the Earth by basically offshoring your polluting industries. Put the nuclear facilities on that side. If there's a leak, no biggie.
Or just store the waste in Outland.
Well, shit, Richard grumbled. This has turned into a real downer. Should we abandon this?
We can't, Richard, Kevin replied. I give it 5 years at most before someone else discovers it independently. Shoulders of giants, remember? At least this way, maybe we can control it a little. On the other hand, Aaron mused, how many third world countries could improve their situation using this technology? How many starving people could have their lives improved?
Right, because the first thing some banana republic dictator is going to think about is how he can use this to improve his country's standard of living. Bill sat back and crossed his arms. That's actually a good argument for getting ahead of this, financially, before it goes public. If we can control how it's used and by whom, maybe we can make sure those people are actually helped.
Jesus, Matt said. This got out of control fast. I liked it better when it was a simple get-rich-quick scheme instead of the fate of the world.
You can always bow out,
Monica said. Matt shook his head.
I agree with Bill. Stepping back is a cop-out. We can't hand it off to anyone else and hope they'll handle it better.
Uh-huh, Bill said.
Based on the politics of the 21st century so far, I think we can guarantee exactly the opposite. So now we're some kind of cabal, deciding the fate of two worlds.
Monica looked around.
Anyone still think conspiracy theories are bullshit?
27. All in a day's work. July 5th. Aaron patted the gate, sitting in the middle of the motorhome's interior.
Nice. Should be a lot easier this time. And more secure,
Kevin added.
Motorhome's on hookup, and we have the backup generator, Bill said.
And we're going to have a practice session with the shotguns when we go across,
Monica said, and looked at Matt. He held up a canvas bag containing boxes of ammo.
You need to have a good feel for using the guns. We can't afford any hesitation if we really need to shoot something, or some things.
All right, Kev, activate. I'll go through first, followed by Monica. When we give the all clear, Richard and Aaron come through.
Kevin started playing with the tablet, and a view of Outland faded into the elliptical frame of the gate. Matt and Monica stepped through. A few seconds later, Matt's voice announced, "All clear."
Aaron and Richard stepped through the gate. As before, the ground on the other side was higher, so it was only a small step down from the level of the motorhome's floor. As soon as all four were across, Bill and Kevin passed through the equipment they'd brought for this expedition. Then they closed the large gate and opened the small one near the motorhome's ceiling, about 8 feet off the ground on the Outland side. The Outland group looked up to see the camera peering at them from a hole in the air. Aaron smiled and waved. Matt held up the ammo bag.
All right, let's do this. First, single shots, to get used to the kick.
Each person took a turn firing their shotgun and pumping another round in. Aaron squealed the first time she fired. By the third try, however, she was massacring trees with a grin on her face.
Make sure you're all reloaded,
Matt said. As they did, the forest sounds started to return.
Now we're going to go full Schwarzenegger. Pump and fire as fast as you can until you've emptied your gun. I'll stand guard.
Monica fired first, followed within seconds by the rest of the group. The boom, boom, boom of three pump-action shotguns silenced the cacophony of the forest. They stopped when they ran out of ammo and reloaded. Once they were done, they paused to look around. The area looked like a giant weed-eater had been at work. Underbrush was gone, and several smaller trees had been cut through. The rest looked severely shredded.
Think we'll be able to find the place again? Richard said with a chuckle.
Okay, people, let's march. Compass says this way. Monica got the spray paint?
Monica held it up in confirmation. Picking up the packaged equipment, the group headed for the creek. They arrived at the stream in short order and unpacked the equipment. Once assembled, they had a shaker table of the kind typically used for higher-volume gold panning. A small gas engine powered a water pump as well as the table itself. Richard examined the table.
Bill may be a mouthy bastard, but he's a good engineer. This thing is a marvel of miniaturization.
He handed Aaron the end of the water intake tube and motioned to the creek.
Of course, we were able to cut some corners on the requirements. We're not trying to capture everything right down to the grains, and we'll use shovels to supply creek bed instead of a separate suction pump.
When everything was ready, Richard started the engine. Aaron placed a small shovel full of dirt from the creek bed, then watched as it shook and pumped water over the muck. Soon, she spotted the first golden nugget.
Eureka!
Monica exclaimed, grabbing the nugget and holding it in the air.
That's great, Monica, Matt said, but you're on guard duty right now. Let Aaron do the celebrating.
Monica begrudgingly handed the nugget to Aaron. Aaron held it in the air in deliberate mimicry, then grinned at her friend and placed the nugget in the bag.
We'll rotate duties, but either Matt or Monica should always be one of the guards at any time. I'm hoping we'll be less jumpy this time around.
Richard picked up the shovel.
I'll do shovel duty first.
Aaron pointed.
We were getting best results over there last time.
Richard began moving shovelfuls to the shaker table. He dug in methodical lines and used the detritus from each trench to fill in the previous one. They stopped for lunch in early afternoon. Everyone maintained vigilance, but nothing dangerous showed itself. As she looked around, Monica said,
I was dreading this a bit after the last time through, but maybe we're okay.
Matt grinned at her.
Well, given the practice session with the guns this morning, I'm guessing everything with any sense is in the next zip code by now.
That helps a lot, too, Richard gestured at the shaker table. Makes a friggin' racket.
Aaron poked at one of the bags that they'd accumulated, filled with gold.
Guys, we are doing pretty good here. We're probably over 20 pounds so far. We might have to make a choice between carrying the gold or the table back.
I'm for leaving the table here overnight, Richard replied. I doubt it'll get stolen, know what I mean? Everyone chuckled, and Matt said,
Yeah, probably smells alien as well. Nothing's going to come close to it.
By late afternoon, each person had endured several turns of shoveling, and as many turns bent over the table looking for nuggets. Groans were becoming more common than exclamations of glee. When Richard's turn to dig came around again, he stared blankly at the shovel for a few seconds, then turned to his friends.
I vote we call it quits for the day.
Works for me,
said Matt as they all nodded. They shut down the table, gathered the bags, and headed back to the gate location, using the path that Monica had marked. When they arrived, the hole in the air disappeared and the large gate faded into existence. The weary group climbed through to civilization. Richard flopped down onto the passenger seat next to Bill.
I have a bad feeling I'm going to regret this tomorrow.
Bill smirked.
Didn't seem that hard to me.
Yeah, maybe you can just...
Children, children,
Matt interrupted.
What's more fun, sniping at each other or ogling our take for the day?
We can't do both, Richard muttered as he came over to the kitchenette table.
Matt shook one of the bags, producing a fan of yellow nuggets in the center of the table.
That's beautiful,
Monica said.
About 30-40 pounds, I think,
Kevin said.
Maybe $500,000.
That'll be more of a problem to move, Richard commented. I'm going to have to expand my radius for assay companies.
Right now, time for dinner, said Bill. And maybe turn in early. Joking aside, you guys look beat.
Richard groaned as he shifted in his seat.
You ain't wrong.
28. The morning after. July 6th. Richard's prediction turned out to be not only correct, but a huge understatement. After several phone alarms had gone through several snooze cycles, Bill finally fell out of bed. Muttering complaints, he levered himself up and headed for the kitchen area.
Coffee. Maybe a large pot.
Within minutes, the odor of coffee filled the motorhome. No one had moved, however. Kevin didn't drink coffee, but Richard and Matt had a definite relationship with it. Finally impatient, Bill yelled out,
Coffee! Come and get it. I'm not a goddamn waiter.
Matt moaned,
Can't move or talk at normal rate.
Damn it, Bill said.
What did I say to you about treading on my turf?
Will you shut the fuck up?
Came from Richard's bunk.
Maybe just for today, I'll be helpful,
Bill thought and poured cups of the elixir of life. Once Richard and Matt were up and wrapping themselves around their mugs, Bill poured a couple more cups for Aaron and Monica. He walked over to the other motorhome and banged on the door.
Time to get up.
Get lost, Aaron said.
Fuck off, Monica added.
I bring coffee, Bill replied.
Be right there,
shouted Aaron.
I love you,
Monica added. Bill smiled.
Much better.
It took two more pots of coffee before the whole crew had sufficiently caffeinated themselves. Matt got up and organized the weapons and ammo. Bill watched this performance.
I hope you guys don't shoot your own feet off out there. We could quit now and head back with what we have, you know.
Matt looked up at him.
Nah. We'll take it easy today. But even if we just get another 20 pounds, I can't believe I just said that. Just another 20 pounds.
Yeah, got it, but be careful, okay?
Matt nodded and opened the door. Bill followed him over to the women's motorhome, where the gate had been set up. A few minutes later, the gold expedition was back in Outland.
During one of the numerous rest breaks, Matt said to Aaron,
I think this will be a short day today.
You think? The moans and groans are pretty pathetic.
What? You're groaning with the rest of us.
I stand by my statement,
she smiled at him.
I guess a bunch of entitled college students aren't used to manual labor. All the more reason to get this done so we can retire right away.
Guys? The tone of Richard's voice made Aaron grab for her shotgun before she even looked up. She turned in the direction Richard was pointing. Two wolves, two very large wolves, were peeking out from the bushes.
Oh, shit,
Monica exclaimed.
Dire wolves. This is the real thing, boys and girls. We are in deep doo-doo.
Matt and Aaron slowly backed toward Richard and Monica, who were covering the other directions.
Remember, guys, you have 7 loads. Make them count,
Matt said. And just to add to the fun, 4 more wolves inched out of the brush.
I don't think this is going to end well, one way or the other,
Aaron said.
Monica? Dire wolves are apex predators. They hunt when they're hungry. They don't fear much. They'll overcome their caution in a few more seconds and start circling, looking for an opening. At that point, it's us or them.
Right, said Matt. Pick a target that's closest to in front of you. When I say go, we... Oh, hell.
The wolves picked that moment to begin circling, as Monica had predicted.
Go.
4 pump-action shotguns cut loose. 1 wolf all but disintegrated, the apparent victim of a double shooting. The 3 remaining wolves froze, then turned and bolted.
Yeah, there's a new apex predator in town, motherfuckers!
Monica yelled, waving her shotgun over her head.
Holy shit, Monica, down, girl,
Aaron said, leaning back.
Sorry,
she grinned at Aaron, then looked at the others.
In retrospect, without another practice session this morning, I guess we didn't scare off the local wildlife.
Matt scanned the trees as he replied.
We've probably taken care of that now, but eventually that'll stop working. Let's call it for the day. We'll talk about this when we're safe on Earthside.
Aaron reached down for one of the canvas bags containing their haul for the day.
Oof. How are we going to lug this loot and the table?
We won't, Richard replied. We shouldn't even try. I don't feel comfortable right now with the idea of having everyone burdened. 2 of us should be weapons ready. Do you feel comfortable being on guard detail with Monica? Aaron shook her head.
No, I think Matt and Monica should do the guarding. I'll carry what I can, but I guess you're going to be pack mule for the day.
I can do that. Richard picked up the canvas bags. In fact, 3 guarding is even better. I'll be okay. Let's go home. The hike back to the gate was significantly slower than the trip out because of the group's heightened alert level and Richard's need for occasional rest breaks. This only increased the tension. Eventually, though, they reached the pickup point. The gate opened, and the group piled through. Bill looked at them as they settled into seats.
I'm sensing a certain deer-in-the-headlights vibe. Something happen over there?
Aaron replied with a sickly grin.
Yeah, we met some more of Monica's pets. Direwolves. Nasty.
I've met them, remember? Not great as neighbors.
Monica laughed once, a short, sharp bark.
Next time we might not come out on top. That was a small family group. If they show up again, they might bring the whole pack. Shotguns or not, you can only shoot so fast, and reloading is not an option.
We may have to up our game, weapons-wise, Matt said, settling more comfortably into his chair.
Richard nodded in agreement.
I'm really becoming convinced we still haven't been taking this seriously enough. This isn't like walking into the back hills for a little hunting.
I used to wonder about movie characters acting too stupid to live, Bill added. I'm starting to realize that it's easy to yell advice at the TV, but we've got no experience with this. We're just not prepared.
Jeez, Bill, coming from you, that's scary, Matt replied. You're the king of paranoia.
Turns out the answer to the question, am I paranoid enough, is no. Come on, Kevin, let's pack up the equipment. Guys, we're going to have to come up with some better strategies. We can mull it over on the ride home tomorrow and have a bull session once we're back. Sound good?
No one replied, and one by one they headed off to begin preparations for the return to Lincoln. 29. Back home. July 7th.
Well, son of a bitch,
Richard said with awe in his voice. The haul from the second expedition was laid out on the table. Aaron sat in front of the scale, scribbling on a pad. The odor of coffee filled the warehouse as Bill's monster machine burbled loudly. Kevin sat working on his tablet, apparently oblivious to the activity. Matt and Monica looked over Aaron's shoulder, reading her notes. Matt's eyes were getting wider and wider.
That's...
Aaron underlined the final note with a flourish and turned with a grin.
Just under $1 million, with the usual assumptions. Have we exhausted the strike?
Kevin said.
Not even close,
Aaron replied.
There's a lot of uncertainty about how much was extracted from Deadwood, of course, but within an order of magnitude, we could probably get $50 million out before we had to start using serious extraction methods. Then we could always go to the home stake load and start digging.
Matt added,
and if we ever came close to exhausting that, Pike's Peak is about the same drive from home.
So you're saying money is no longer an issue?
Kevin said, his voice shaking a little.
Well, we're not there yet, Kevin, Richard said. But it's a damned good start, and the only thing standing in our way is logistics.
Speaking of which, Matt said.
Yeah, we need to make some decisions.
Monica looked around the table.
We're all in agreement that we won't add to the group?
Nods all around greeted her question.
So that rules out larger expeditions. Guard dogs?
Too much upkeep, Bill said. You can't rent guard dogs like you can a motorhome, at least not without handlers.
And there's no way to do that without bringing more people in on the secret,
Aaron said.
Bill was pretty clear on how that always works out.
Bill grinned. King of paranoia. Just doing my job.
The problem,
Monica said,
is balancing safety and efficiency. The more people guarding, the fewer people digging. If we can't bring in more members, then we have to go with hardware. I like the idea of construction fences, maybe even electrical fences.
Then we'll need a generator, Richard said.
And a fuel tank, Matt added, which we'll have to service.
We'll need to cut an access road to the creek,
Aaron added,
which means heavy equipment.
She shook her head.
This is escalating quickly. It's beginning to sound like a logging camp.
Supplied, maintained, and staffed by 6 people, Richard replied, all while continuing to maintain our daily lives and go on gold panning expeditions.
And we're doing this because real jobs would be too much work. Bill grinned at his friends.
I don't think we're doing it right.
The others chuckled. Several seconds of silence followed as each person dealt with their own thoughts.
We need to cut loose from the university, Richard finally said.
Oh, hell no,
Monica jumped in.
Even if I'm going to end up a rich bitch from this, I'm getting my degree. My parents...
I don't mean you guys, Richard interrupted. I mean Kevin and me. We need to submit our project, return the equipment, do everything we can to divorce the university from what we're doing.
Bill sat back and looked up at the warehouse ceiling.
The custom equipment I did for you, not a problem. The PC components and tablets are off the shelf. We can replace that on Amazon. What about the physics lab specific items?
As I've mentioned before, the university orders its scientific equipment from a distributor in Omaha, Richard said. They're just a middleman, so they have to order in anything we ask for. That slows things down.
We can wave a wad of cash under their noses and see if it speeds things up, Bill said. And speaking of money, Richard sighed.
Yeah, about that. We have to unload almost $1 million worth of gold in small batches. We're going to have to go further afield and rotate our visits so the assay services don't see the same person twice.
That's going to be a headache, Aaron said. I can't believe I'm saying this, but is there any way to do this under the table?
Monica laughed.
You are the last person I expected to hear that from. Let me write this down in my diary. Yeah, funny.
Maybe we can talk to your family?
Monica lost her smile.
You may think you're joking, Aaron, but Gino seems to have a lot of money all the time and doesn't talk about his job. Dad's been worried about it. Sorry, Monica.
Aaron's face fell.
I didn't mean to step on a sore spot.
Can we get back on track, please? Richard looked around the group. We have to stick with assay services, especially the ones that will refine what we bring in and pay us based on the actual gold content. The other places will make an offer based on some assumed percentage, and you can bet their estimates won't be generous. But we're not going to get spot price in any case, so we're going to take a hit on the payout.
80% of free money is still pretty good, Bill interjected.
Slows us down, though, Matt said.
Still waiting for everyone to focus, Richard said, gritting his teeth. He waited for silence, then continued. Aaron, I wouldn't even know where to start if I wanted to go the under-the-table route. Even doing things more or less legally, I'm learning as I go. This really isn't covered in my physics courses. Aaron laughed and waved her hand for Richard to continue. So we have two priorities. Once we've got the money, first, to get the university out of the equation as quickly as possible. That means ordering equipment from that distributor in Omaha and buying PC equipment for the stock components. We've already got the custom items. Said Bill. Richard sighed.
What is it now, Bill?
We talked about construction fences and generators and so forth. That's our other priority, right? Security for when we're in Outland? At Richard's nod, Bill continued.
They won't fit through the 6-foot gates. Actually, a lot of things won't. I need to build a bigger gate. We were talking before about something that we could fit a truck through. I think I should go for that, but I'm going to need a bigger work area to do that.
Richard put his head in his hand.
It never ends.
Okay, look, you and Kevin need to get your project finished and handed in. I'm pretty much done for the year, so I can take on the purchasing duties.
I can help with that, Monica added. I'm an expert at spending money, especially other people's money. My dad says so all the time.
She paused for the chuckles.
And anyway, this sounds like fun, sort of prepper-like. Not that I am one, you understand.
Aaron and I will work on cashing in the gold, Matt added. We'll need some of everyone else's time just so we have enough faces doing this, but we'll take care of organizing it. We'll put up a schedule.
Good, Richard said.
We may actually be making progress.
30. In the news. CNN News headlines on the hour. More volcanic activity is being reported in Yellowstone, but the USGS is downplaying the significance of these events, saying that the chemical changes that have been detected in local rivers are minor and temporary. When asked about the significance of the thermal imaging anomalies reported last week, the USGS stressed that even if the events are related, they do not provide any indication of future activity. Nevertheless, in consideration of public safety, the National Park Service has closed Yellowstone until earthquake activity drops back to background levels. The Montana Governor's Office has announced plans for voluntary evacuations of the area near the park, and we have reports of a steady exodus of residents from the nearby towns of West Yellowstone, Gardner, and Cook City. Meanwhile, government agencies have reported a dramatic increase in chatter on known terrorist channels and are issuing warnings about possible attacks in undisclosed locations. One unnamed government source said extremist groups see the Yellowstone activity as a direct message from God and are using it as a rallying call. In other news, there have been reports in the area around Deadwood, South Dakota, of a significant increase in livestock deaths. Sightings by local residents described several impossibly large wolves. Local law enforcement has dismissed the descriptions as exaggeration. It's like that fish you caught, says Deadwood Sheriff. It just keeps getting bigger. 31. A business opportunity. July 8th. Lem Carpentier considered his options.
That was two ridiculously large essay submissions within a week, both by kids who had no business being in the business. Both cases were just under the reporting cutoffs, and both were obviously from the same source, or someplace very similar. The size distribution, quality of the nuggets, and type of accretions were dead giveaways for someone who knew what they were looking at. So, some kids had discovered a gold mine? No, this was placer. Gold panning. River nuggets tended to have far fewer accretions than the mined variety. Still, same problem, or maybe even a bigger problem. What rivers in the U.S. hadn't already been prospected to death? Or maybe this was an old cache of gold that they discovered and were trying to cash in, which might not have originally belonged to them. For whatever reason, they were trying to do it quietly. Whether they were trying to dodge the IRS, the feds, or trying not to attract someone else's attention didn't matter. However you looked at it, that was leverage. They would be willing to give something up to keep it quiet. Lem existed on the outskirts of the criminal underworld, someone with a legitimate job, but one that allowed certain activities to be carried out in an expeditious manner. Lem was always well compensated for carrying out these favors, but he didn't kid himself. He was a small fish in the big picture. This situation, though, could be an opportunity if he could figure out how to play it. Handing it over to some of the people he knew would just get him a pat on the head and a small payoff, on a score that could be worth millions, based on what he'd seen so far, especially if his employer wasn't the only assay company these kids were using. But maybe a smaller outfit would be more willing to give him a bigger piece. It might be time to make some phone calls, talk to a few of his fellow frontline workers. It might give him a better idea how big this was. Zeke flicked the paper back and forth in his fingers and stared silently across the table. Lem found himself increasingly uncomfortable. This was the first time he was going to them instead of the other way around, and he didn't care for the role reversal. And the guy across the table, a large, bald man with a prominent facial scar, would have been intimidating in any circumstances. Things hadn't actually gotten tense yet. He might still be able to get out in one piece. Lem leaned forward to get up.
Maybe this was a mistake.
Zeke made a patting motion with his other hand.
Now, ease up, bro. I'm deliberating.
He looked to his left where two other individuals were standing and grinned.
We're deliberating, right?
The two, who had been introduced as Carl and Jimmy, smiled back at him. Lem eyed them suspiciously. Jimmy wasn't too bad, a skinny, nondescript type that you'd expect to make a living breaking into cars or something. But the other guy, Carl, looked like an enforcer. Smashed nose, ragged beard, massive frame, and built like a tank. Talked educated, though, which sounded strange coming from that face. Zeke turned back to Lem and his smile vanished.
We're a business, Lem. Risks and returns, you know. This thing you've brought to us, it looks interesting, but this isn't like leaning on some immigrant restaurant owner for protection money or selling party drugs to teenagers.
Zeke was silent as he scanned the paper again.
Maybe this is an ongoing thing, or maybe they've already cashed in everything they had. Might be there's nothing left to get in on. But we'll look into it. That's easy enough with the information you've given us. And they're local, which is even better. But if you're right about these being college students, they might not be so easy to push around, and they might not stay pushed. Kids from rich families have a whole entitled thing that shields them from reality. And killing them to get their attention will just bring the cops down on us in force. A one-time profit might be easier than a steady income. Know what I mean?
Lem colored slightly.
Zeke grimaced. I mean, just hit them once and take everything. They'll be ready for a second try, so no second try. We take what we can and walk away. Minimum risk, minimum exposure. Got it?
Lem nodded.
And my cut?
We're doing all the work and taking all the risks, so don't expect an equal partnership. Hitting them once means finding out when is the best time to do that, which means legwork. All that costs money and time. On the other hand, we want you to think of us in the future if you happen upon other business opportunities, so don't worry about being ripped off. Fair?
Fair.
32. Surveillance. July 9th. Carl and Jimmy sat in the SUV watching the building. The address that Lem had been given turned out to be a self-serve warehouse complex. Unless it was completely bogus, someone had some kind of operation set up here. Jimmy had been squirming and muttering for several minutes, and Carl had finally had enough.
What? What's the problem?
This doesn't feel right.
Why?
People use these places for all kinds of business operations. They're cheap, and the operators don't ask too many questions as long as you don't burn the place down. My brother-in-law runs a health supplement mail-order business out of one.
Yeah? Does your brother-in-law produce millions of dollars worth of gold?
Okay. We don't know what's going on. I'm just saying it doesn't necessarily take a Bond villain-style lair under a volcano. Let's wait until we have more info.
Carl looked down at his phone.
They didn't provide a unit number, so we'll have to get inventive. You ready to go?
Jimmy pulled out his handgun and checked it, then nodded to Carl. The Toyota pulled into the warehouse lot, heading for the access gate. Carl pulled in behind the small car and Jimmy jumped out. He walked slowly in the general direction of the office while watching through the car's windows as the driver keyed in his code. Then he turned and gave Carl a thumbs up before increasing his pace. As the Toyota pulled through the opening gate, Carl turned to park in front of the office and shut off his engine. He idly scanned the property, sizing up the situation. The warehouse consisted of outside units with rolling doors and inside units accessible only through the main doors and loading bay. If the group they were looking for had rented an interior space, things might be more difficult. Jimmy walked out the office doors and climbed into the SUV.
They're in 1519. It's an outside unit. Cost me a C-note, but the clerk recognized a couple names. These kids actually use their real names. Idiots.
Unless they've used the same fake names everywhere, or unless they're legitimate.
Not the way Lem described it. They're hiding something.
They can be hiding something without breaking the law, Jimmy. They might simply not want a bunch of copycats or snoopers following them around.
Jimmy grinned.
Not really working for them, is it?
Carl smirked by way of reply and pulled out of the parking lot.
We'll come back later and see what we can see.
Bill guided the small forklift with hand signals as it placed the last pallet in the indicated location. The operator handed Bill a clipboard and he signed it with a grin and a flourish. A quick exchange of pleasantries and the forklift was out the warehouse door and being reattached to the transport truck. Bill pulled down the rolling door and whooped.
"Yeah, we're a couple of high rollers," Monica said to him. "You'd better hope Richard doesn't get a look at this."
Bill looked around the warehouse, with pallets and boxes lying around in apparently random disorder.
"Actually, it doesn't look that bad yet. Most of the stuff we've ordered still hasn't arrived, but I get your point."
They moved to the kitchen table and grabbed coffees. They each activated their own tablets and worked in silence for a few minutes.
"How's it going on weapons?" Bill said. "Oh, I think you'll be pleased," Monica replied. "Shotguns don't cut it when you've got multiple adversaries to worry about. Something with a big magazine, easily convertible to automatic fire, is just the ticket." "You know we're talking about animals, right?" "Dire wolves are big suckers, Bill." "I didn't realize how big. I mean, I knew because I've seen their skeletons, but having one right in front of you, tasting you in its mind, well, I'm all for overkill, you know?"
"Gotcha.
And to be honest, I'd rather be able to dial it back than come up short." Great. So we've got the sheds now. Construction fences are coming. Generators, supplies. We can surround the panning area with the modular fences so we won't be as exposed.
Monica rested her hand on his.
We'll all have to take some real firearms training next. Now, how are we going to get all this equipment to Deadwood?
Yeah, there's that. We'll have to rent a couple of moving vans and one of those powered hand lifts, or maybe rent a forklift at the other end, or hell with it, just buy one. It would have been easier to do all this in Deadwood in the first place.
We talked about it. No one volunteered to move there full time.
Silence reigned for a few seconds before Bill said,
What if one of us gets injured? How will we handle that?
To be honest, Bill, we'd be no worse off than if someone got injured Earthside, out in the bush. We're setting things up so we'll never be far from the portals. And Aaron has good first aid skills.
Bill sighed and sat back.
Want to hear a confession?
Always.
After all those years yelling at the screen when characters did stupid things, I'm starting to feel some sympathy for them. All these things we should be thinking of and should have thought of. If we seem to just blunder along, somehow staying one step ahead of trouble. Honestly, I feel like the Red Queen running to stay in place.
You aren't having fun?
I never said that. I like spending money, too.
There was a hello from the warehouse door. Bill stood.
That's the facilities manager. Time to spend yet more money.
Where's Monica? Richard said as he walked into the warehouse. Bill looked up from his tablet.
In the other storage unit.
Richard stopped dead. We have another unit now?
I needed somewhere to set up a fabrication shop to put together the new gates. All that manufacturing equipment takes up room. We've moved all the portal equipment and weapons over there, and Monica is making room for all the new weapons she's buying.
Several seconds of silence followed before Richard spoke. I knew it was a mistake letting you two have the purse strings. Bill grinned in response.
Wait until you see what I've been doing.
I'm not sure I want to know. Richard opened the fridge and pulled out a Coke. He sat down across from Bill and glanced at Monica's tablet, which was sitting on the table. More guns. Big guns. Why am I not surprised?
I was equally impressed. Seriously, though, 3 out of 4 times that we've opened a gate, you guys have met predators, and the fourth one, well, you probably frightened them off without realizing it, so Outland is looking scarier than a D&D campaign. We want to be prepared.
Richard shrugged without comment and watched Bill work on his tablet for a minute. That's got to be pretty slow going through your cell's hotspot.
Nope, Wi-Fi. We have our own cable and internet now. I arranged it with the facilities guy.
For free? Bill's only reply was a laugh. Richard put his head in his hands and groaned. 33. At the gun range. Aaron watched as Monica pushed the switch to send her target to the maximum distance. Monica adjusted her safety glasses and hearing protection, raised the Glock to ready position, aimed, and began firing. Richard looked over from the next lane, his eyes getting wider as Monica methodically squeezed off shots. He waited to speak until she had emptied her magazine.
Good God, woman, you're enjoying this way too much.
Monica pressed the button to retrieve her target. Aaron, who had been in the next lane, leaned around the partition.
And this seems out of character because...
Richard laughed, then turned to Matt.
All right, I'm done. You can have the lane. I'll be outside at the rifle range. We're going to try out the new AR-15s.
Ooh!
Monica exclaimed.
Me too. I want to try out the new assault rifle.
Matt raised an eyebrow at Richard.
Girls and their toys.
Monica stuck her tongue out at him, then left, dragging Richard along behind her.
Like a squirrel towing a moose, Aaron thought, watching them walk away. A very energetic squirrel.
She paused to look at Monica's target, which she hadn't bothered to take down. There were 2 very close-spaced groupings of bullet holes, one group dead center on the chest, and the other group right in the groin.
Possibly rabid, Squirrel.
Matt and Aaron caught up with Richard and Monica at the outdoor range. Monica had set up with the AR-15 and was methodically squeezing off shots. Richard watched the target with binoculars. He turned to them.
She scares me. I like to think I'm becoming a pretty good shot, but shit.
He inclined his head toward Monica to emphasize his point.
So where are Bill and Kevin?
Aaron hitched her thumb in the direction of the parking lot.
Kevin did the bare minimum necessary to learn how to shoot and called it a lifetime. I don't think he likes guns. Bill is still on the gun range. He takes a few shots, does a Dirty Harry quote, takes a few shots. The guy is seriously deranged. He just needs a girlfriend.
Monica safetied the rifle, swapped magazines, and handed it to Richard.
You're up, sunshine. Do try to hit the target this time, hmm?
Richard faked exaggerated laughter and moved into position.
I'll want to go over our inventory next time we're back at the warehouse,
Monica said to Matt and Aaron.
We kind of neglected the handgun factor when we did our first round of purchases. We definitely need something for short-range work.
First round? Aaron exclaimed.
What are you ramping up for? A war? Well, first... Oh, God, I'm starting to sound like Kevin.
They all laughed, and Monica continued.
You have to remember that my introduction to this escapade was a Smilodon trying to eat me. That set a certain tone, and subsequent events have given me no reason to rethink it. We're going to be going, probably many times, into an environment that hasn't been thinned out by the scourge known as humanity. There's a full-on ecosystem on the other side, and it's got a lot of apex predators, and a lot of prey animals that have learned how to fight back. Bill and I had a conversation about this. One thing he's right about is that movie characters always go in underprepared and overconfident. I intend to go in overprepared, armed to the teeth, and ready to shoot anything that even looks at me funny.
Aaron smiled.
Well, you ain't wrong.
They laughed at Richard's favorite line. Richard just gritted his teeth and took another shot.
34. Casing the joint. July 10th. Once again, Carl and Jimmy sat in the SUV outside the warehouse complex. At some point, the staff would close up for the night. Soon, the lights were turned off and the neon open sign went dark. Carl pulled up to the entrance and typed in the code that Jimmy had seen the Toyota owner use.
People really need to be more careful when entering pins and such,
Carl laughed to himself.
No, not really.
Their carelessness made his life a lot easier. Jimmy jumped out as Carl pulled up to the warehouse door. Surveillance cameras were recording this whole process, of course, but no one would review them unless something happened to attract attention. It took seconds for Jimmy to pick the lock. B&Es were Jimmy's specialty, and there were very few locks that could stand up to him for long. He raised the rolling door, and they walked in. Carl wasn't sure what he had expected, but this wasn't it. The warehouse was maybe 800 square feet, crammed full of a bewildering array of crates, pallets, and miscellaneous items. Water, food, camping equipment, tools, and a couple of kits for large metal storage sheds. Good quality, too. Real steel, not the cheap tinny ones that would fall over if you leaned on them. In one corner was a kitchen area with a fridge, microwave oven, kettle, toaster, big-ass coffee maker, and some empty drink cans and pizza boxes. But nothing that would set it apart from a retail supply warehouse. No industrial equipment, no weird electronics, nothing that would attract attention if you just randomly walked in here. Carl felt a vague twinge of disappointment. He'd had a wacko theory.
I don't see any gold,
Jimmy said.
"'Cause they'll just store it here in plain sight. Jeez, Jimbo. The camping equipment makes sense, though, if they're actually panning somewhere. And look, over here.'
Carl walked to the roll-up door and pointed down. Tire tracks showed on the warehouse floor, the double rows indicating a heavy-duty truck of some kind.
"'Let's go over everything in here. You start at that end.'
The two men slowly worked their way around the warehouse, examining each item and occasionally taking pictures with their phones.
Carl finished with a video sweep of the entire space. Their inspection done, Carl and Jimmy sat down at the kitchen table. Carl reviewed his video while Jimmy checked the fridge. Carl leaned back on his chair and mused out loud.
So, these kids have a warehouse full of equipment. Most of it's unopened, and even the stuff that's being used still looks new. That means lots of money, which ties in with Lem's story, and probably recent money, so this hasn't been going on long.
Jimmy paused to pop the tab on a can of Coke. The snap and fizz echoed through the warehouse.
Zeke might rethink the idea of a single hit. If there's enough money involved, it might be worth taking a chance on keeping this group in line.
Or maybe a combination of the two. We let the group buy in with, say, all of their next haul, and then maybe 50% on an ongoing basis.
I could go for that.
We all could, Jimmy. Easy money. But we have to find out where they're getting it from. Otherwise, if they choose to just disappear, we're left with nothing.
We follow them?
Carl snorted.
Screw that. I've got a life. We'll follow them until we can lowjack their vehicles.
35. In the news. This is KCWY Casper News at 10. Satellite images show that the smoke clouds from the recent venting events at Yellowstone have reached as high as 12,000 feet. Although the reported ash content is insignificant, the FAA has issued a directive making the area within 200 miles of Yellowstone a no-fly zone for commercial airline traffic. Airlines are scrambling to reroute their flights and are promising customers that they will refund any tickets on request. And in a follow-up to our earlier reports of livestock deaths, a local cattleman has reported killing one of the unusually large wolves. I have never seen anything even close to this size, says Richard Harrow. You can't tell me this is a normal wolf. I think we may have a new species of super wolf. This has got to be because of all the nuclear testing. We contacted local wildlife experts and showed them the photographs of the purported super wolf. Our contact, who declined to be identified, stated that the photos must have been photoshopped to look like an extinct dire wolf. A good job, though. Accurate, based on what we know, plus a few plausible details I wouldn't have expected. I suspect an inside job, maybe a practical joke by a local university. 36. Third Expedition. July 13th. Traffic on the highway was moving at speed, and Aaron sat in the passenger seat, enjoying the zen. Richard slouched in the driver's seat, steering with one hand, tapping his fingers in time with the song on the radio. The group had stepped up a level of quality when renting the motorhomes this time around, and the new units all but drove themselves. Richard glanced out at the side mirror again, and Aaron asked him,
"Still looking for that SUV?"
"Yeah. I feel a little embarrassed about it now. They disappeared after the Kearney stop. Looks like they were just using us as a pace car. I guess Bill's paranoia really is contagious."
Aaron smiled but didn't reply. Bill was funny, and she understood why he and Matt were friends, but Bill could be a little much sometimes. It wasn't really a surprise that he and Monica had connected right away. They both had that same oddball sense of humor.
"Things are going well, though," Richard said into the air.
"Hmm?"
"We've pulled in over a megabuck so far, and we could double that this weekend, now that we have it more or less down to a science."
"If Bill and Monica don't spend it all."
"You ain't wrong. But we have all our own equipment now, and the school has all of its equipment back."
"And Keating?"
"We submitted our project results with absolutely no surprises or anomalous results. I feel bad about that, to be honest. It's a mortal sin in science, but Keating signed off on it. He probably didn't even read it, the bastard."
"So you're good for next semester?"
"Assuming we go back in the fall. It's a little unsettling, but right now I'm more invested in this whole Outland thing. I might even put off college for a year. No studying, no exams, no cramming. The worst thing I have to look forward to right now is some back-breaking labor and
Bill's inane jibes.
Aaron laughed. Could be worse.
Yeah, Bill could be in here with us. 37. That can't be right.